Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Eddie Moore as a Jeff Hurst. Trevor Brookin and Billy Bones, Paolo Di Canio, West Ham United, more than just a podcast, more than just a podcast.
Good evening, good morning, or good afternoon. This is More Than Just a Podcast.
Podcast!
My name is George. I'm here with Sean. Hello, Sean.
Good afternoon, good morning, or good evening, Georgie.
Where are you? What are you doing?
I am in sunny Spain. I've just come from happy hour, so I'm happy. And I'm in just off Malaga in Club La Costa World and just come from the pool in lovely 30-degree heat. So I'm happy as Larry.
Very nice. I'm here with Nigel. Hello, Nigel.
Hello, George.
Where are you? What are you doing?
I'm in my shed.
And I'm here with John. Hello, John.
Hello.
Where are you? What are you doing?
I'm at home and I'm on my computer talking to you.
Can we just hear about Nigel's shed? Because he's a new presenter for this podcast in its seventh season. I'd like to hear about Nigel's shed, because I understand it's a little bit special. Nigel?
Well, it's wooden. It's 5 metres by 4 metres, and it is filled to the brim, to the point of bursting, with West Ham memorabilia.
What kind of stuff you've nicked, or what kind of memorabilia?
That's a question you know the answer to, and I'm not going to answer. But it's got programs going back to the 60s, West Ham fanzines, West Ham magazines, pictures, books.
Big sign?
I've got a couple of big signs, yeah. I've got stuff out the bowling tunnel that I bought, as well as that I didn't buy.
I did promise you, because when I went to the bowling just before it got knocked down, I've got the remote control for the scoreboard. I have got the technical logbook for the bowling ground. I've got a number of other bits and pieces that I've promised podcasters that I will give them. And I still have a really big black sack full of stuff for them bowling. So I will add to your collection. I did promise you that. I think I promised you the logbook, didn't I?
You did. All gifts gratefully received. I received a box this week from a good friend who sent me some magazines, programs, but some great old fanzines, including ones I'd never seen, Who Ate All the Pies. It was a couple of issues of that, which it's good to look back over the old fanzines and see everyone moaning.
Let's hope there's not many people here who know where you live, Nige, because, you know.
That is true. It is a secret.
Do you still live in East Ham? Do you still live at 443 Green Street?
Lonsdale Avenue.
To where David Gold
that's
was.
It. 443 Lonsdale Avenue. That's it.
Well, that's the end of your shed stories then, Nige.
Yeah, come back next week for more shed updates.
Another shed update. So let's talk about West Ham, well, and the game at Southampton. I was the only one who went, but I guess we all watched it in various ways.
What was John's excuse of not going?
He had prior engagement in the evening, didn't you?
I did, yes. Which went on till 2 o'clock in the morning.
Hey. And Nigel's?
Well, I'm so used to watching us lose away, I might as well just do it on the telly.
And that's what happened.
And that is what happened.
Where to start, really? Should we start with... Well, obviously, the first half performance as a whole wasn't really that impressive at all, but obviously Arnautovic sending off did us no favours. But, you know, we were already... Was it... Were we 1-0 down at that point or 2-0 down?
1.
So, I think...
Were you drunk?
Was I? No, I wasn't. It was just, you know, just
all blurs
into one, didn't it?
In the pictures you sent us, you looked a bit drunk.
What, in the picture of me
wearing... Were you doing, like, Tennent's Extra or Special Brew on the way up on the train?
Yeah, Scrumpy Jacks.
Were you drinking Scrumpy Jacks?
Yeah, I was, yeah.
Were you?
Obviously not, no.
With your TV friends?
Yep.
They were probably on a Prosecco.
Yeah. And... I wasn't drunk. I just didn't realise what point of the game the Arnautovic sending off happened. So, do we blame him on the poor first half performance?
No.
Yes.
I do.
Why do you blame him? I mean, he obviously had a moment of madness. When you buy a player like that, who's got an ego as big as a house, you expect some kind of reaction. But in my view, we hadn't turned up. Even before his sending off, had we turned up? We were 1-0 down. We looked the poorer team.
So he could have scored. So that was a good
move. He should have
scored. So actually, I'm not sure you can say we hadn't turned up, but he made it twice as hard, didn't he?
He did.
All down to one man, Nigel.
Not the whole defeat, no. But I think he's culpable for putting us in that position, yes.
You need to wake up and smell the roses, Nigel, because there's a deeper problem than just Arnautovic, as Jay would call him.
Do you mean there's a deeper problem?
Well, have we actually improved? Is the problem more deeper? I don't want to go on a bit more without actually spelling it out. Billage.
Oh, shut up. Here we go. Anyway, carry on, George, with your...
Go on, George.
Well, no, I think that's what we're here to do is debate. But Sean, you last week you were sticking up for the signing, saying that the board and the manager have made great signings. So now you're saying that Bilic is to blame for our lack of improvement. Is that right?
I think. I mean, on paper, they're all great signings. No, Simone Zaza was a good signing.
They're not all great signings.
Touré was a good signing on paper, allegedly. You know, name someone at the time who actually had a problem with the signings we made. The answer is no one. Even Snodgrass and Font, right? When we signed them, people went, yeah, it's a good bit of business.
Only
Font
people scored... you talk to, Sean, in your little
no,
world.
No, come on. When we signed Snodgrass, did you say to me, John, oh my God, we've got that
I said to you, it was typical West Ham, we lose Piatt and get Snodgrass. How more West Ham can you get?
You know, yeah, but you're comparing one with the other. You didn't say, Snodgrass is going to be completely useless.
No, but I didn't say great. It's a great signing, did I? He's another average Premier League player, which is obviously he's got some kind of sort of personality issue going on with the squad or whatever. He's not settled, is he? So they want rid.
But I understand. For me, this was the first game that we had to prove ourselves. You know, I didn't expect anything with Man United. Typical West Ham, 2-0 down, get back to 2-2, lose 3-2 in injury time. You could have written the script yourself. I know we're going to say the really big start of the season now is against Newcastle. But if he loses 3 on the bounce, well, 4 on the bounce if he loses against Cheltenham as well, that puts him in a really tricky position. And Clarence Hugh might have to run a Bilic poll.
Well, it does put him in a tricky position. I agree, but I don't think that any will benefit at all from sort of rushing to get rid of him this season, just because, you know, I think there's an argument to be said that when you play your first, well, 4 games now it is away from home, you're going to struggle, aren't you? No one else is dealing with that.
It's the way exactly. We play away.
Yeah.
Is there any positives to take from the game, from you?
Moving on the Southampton game. So I think Jose Font had a terrible game. I think he's another one that we can point a finger at for the result. I think his overall defensive work, the way Gabbiadini walked through the defence for the first goal, pretty much, and also his sort of, I can't remember who he fouled, but whoever he grabbed round the neck and pulled down to the floor, to give the second penalty or the first penalty away. You know, I think he's another one. But we came out second half and I thought we battled really well, and I think they were shooting down our end after the goal in the first half just before half time. I think that made a big difference as well, and we got back to 2-2, and I think me and Nigel were chatting about it before we started recording, but I think it was a very, very soft penalty especially a penalty like that in the 93rd minute. I think, you know, it feels like it's always us that it goes against, and
was that
we
the
never
font one or the other one?
The one in the 93rd
minute. The one in the 93rd minute.
Yeah, I was at the airport at the time. Remind me.
It was
who caused the penalty?
Zabaleta.
The first one was the font one, which was definitely...
One of our great on-paper signings, Sean.
Yeah, I know.
let's
celebrate Little P. Because Little P scored a brace.
Yeah, well, all of those decisions, see, I don't think that the ref was terrible. You know, I mean, they were, you know, that even that penalty right at the death, we would have wanted that. If that was against us, we would have wanted that. You know, you see him given and you don't. So the fact that it was given isn't a shocking decision, I don't think.
But you do see them not given more.
Yeah,
than
you do. You do see him not given. But the fact that it was given isn't shocking, because he did lean into him. He did make the most of it, but he did do it. As in, you know, Noble could have gone quite easily. I think we should have had a penalty from handball. I think the bloke lifted his arm to the ball. So I think there were some decisions that sort of didn't go either way. But all in all, the sending off, you can't complain about. Both of the penalties, the second one was soft, but the first one was a definite. You know, Noble could have been sent off as well. So it was just a pretty poor performance again all round. Defensively, we were all over the place.
Yeah, does it? I mean, the defensive issues are there for everyone to see now, aren't they?
Yeah, I mean, Font, like you say, Font is awful, and he's not produced since he's been here.
Those problems with VR, going back to the last season of the bowling, the reason why we didn't finish top four at the bowling was not offensively, but defensively, and they never addressed it last season. And we struggled with the defence last season. And then he's walked into it this season. And, you know, they've bought the name Zabaleta, but he's not the player Zabaleta. He's 32 years of age. His pace has gone. If he was still a good player, Man City would be playing him. You know, they've not strengthened the defence.
But it's for now, right? And let's not overreact already. Let's concentrate on Little P, who scored two goals. And he proved to me, right, the positive I'm going to take away is he proved to me what a goal poacher he is, you know? And this is the second ball. What have we said last season? We just missed those second balls. And little tap-ins for both of them. But he just shows that, you know, typical West Ham, off the post, off the second ball, bang, and Little P's in there.
But
Chikorita.
He needs someone up with him. That's the thing.
Yeah, but he got
second
two goals. I think that's really going to hold us well, you know?
The second goal only happened because he had someone up with him, didn't it?
Yeah.
The Sacco was unlucky not to score. Great save.
Yeah, it was.
But I don't think the second one was a tap-in finish either, to be honest. I think he done well to hit that so quickly on the bounce and finish it the way he did.
I mean, he was good finishing.
I don't think for me personally, that hasn't had to be proved. I've always known he was a good goal poacher and a good goal scorer. And I think he is a great signing and will be a great signing for us, but he needs to play up front with someone else.
Let me just give you the stats, because I know we haven't done a running order, because I'm away and no one else does anything. But
how was your meeting in the week, George? All right?
Possession?
Yeah, it was good.
Southampton had 66% to our 34%. Southampton had 14 shots at only 5 on target, but West Ham had 16 shots with 8 on target. So, you know, all right, we didn't have the possession, but we had the shots. 16 shots, I'm going to say, 8 on target to their 14 and 5 on target.
And it goes back to the point, Sean. it goes back to the point that if we had 11 men on the pitch, we probably would have won the game. Because
I agree. Don't get me wrong. Right? He was stupid. He deserved to be sent off. There's talk of him getting up to a 5-game ban. You sent me something. Was that what he put out afterwards at like 2 o'clock in the morning, George?
Yeah, he put a public apology on his Instagram.
What time was this? I heard it was like early hours.
Oh, I don't know.
He won't get a 5-game ban, will he?
Well, I'm just saying that's what the talk is of if it gets reviewed,
3 games, surely. Won't get
well,
five
Hackett
games.
Well, Hackett was talking about this. I say I haven't quite followed it.
Fuck all, is he?
Yeah.
You know, there's no way he's going to get a 5-game ban.
He might do. You know, it was a blatant elbow and a revenge attack, wasn't it, is how it's being portrayed in all the media.
But it wasn't him that done him in the first place. It was another.
No, I know, but what they're saying is he, as a person, has sought revenge and made a elbow purposefully on a defender, didn't matter who it was.
Yeah. I'd be absolutely shocked if he got 5 games for that.
To be fair, the way he's playing, can we not ask for a 5-game ban?
Unfair. I remember signing.
He posted on his Instagram, I think it was overnight after on Saturday night, "I want to apologise to all the West Ham fans. Just want to let you know I didn't want to let my team down and you fans. So please, sorry. Come on, you Irons. A big apology to you all."
There you go. So what's the answer? We are defensively shocking. So is that Carvalho the answer, is he?
No, he's a holding
Chiarchi,
midfielder,
aren't we?
Yeah, well, he helps, doesn't he, though?
Chiarchi does. He's an unsung hero, in my view.
Sean, I don't know if you've heard, but have you had any update from Winston Reid? Not from him, but on him.
I did, actually. I mean, I'm a little bit out of touch in Spain. But I have been been sent a few messages, and I did say something. Let me just give you a injury update on Winston Reid. Winston's calf injury looks like to keep the defender out of action for the weekend against Newcastle. The medical staff took the injury serious enough to take him off during the warm-up. So it sounds like it's a grade 1 calf strain, about 10 days. So it doesn't sound too bad. He's probably just going to miss the cup game against Cheltenham and the barcodes or the Magpies.
Is James Collins fit?
I believe so. Yeah.
Collins for me.
Collins and Ogbonna on Saturday.
Collins for me, I will fight. Yeah.
Or, you know, bring Reece Burke back. Why not? Anyway, that's Southampton. Any more on Southampton?
No, I don't think so. Nothing to see here. Move along. It was unfortunate. You know, we would have all been in a better mood if we'd have got the draw and we'd have held on. You know, we'd have accepted the point after being 2-0 down and down to 10 men. 2-2 would have been a fair result. But, you know, we're West Ham. Same old West Ham, what can you say?
Always us.
Yeah, always Sean, us.
Can you introduce this part of the podcast, please?
Sure. Just share what a gaffer has to say.
Slaven, do you feel an unlucky manager today?
Yeah, we lost a point, but we gained a lot of things. We showed the character, we showed the quality, we showed that we can cope with 10 men, that we can score 2 goals, that we can stop them from scoring. And to be fair, we started also good. We had 2 or 3 chances to take the lead. We didn't, but it's very disappointing way to lose the game at the end.
What was your view of the penalty decision?
I mean, there's no point, you know, to talk about it all there. I would rather say that I'm very proud of my team, that they showed everything I said now, the commitment, the quality, the character, team spirit, and we never gave up.
The other big talking point was obviously the red card, which left you with 10 men.
I don't want to talk.
What about the player himself?
I'm the manager, and I want to talk about the game and those decisions. I'm going to leave to someone else to talk about it.
Is the player disappointed? Have you spoken to the player?
Yeah, of course I spoke to the player, but I just told you. I just told you that if you want to ask me for 2 hours, I'm going to talk about the wealth, I'm going to talk about the quality of the game, I'm going to talk about that and that, I'm going to talk about those decisions.
As you said, there were a lot of positives to take from that, the way your team battled. How hard is it to play with 10 men, and what sort of character did they show?
It's very hard to play, especially that you already one down, and then you concede the second goal, and then it's very difficult to come back. And on the paper, it's very difficult to keep it 2-0, basically. But that's where we show the character and the quality and everything, and we show that we are fit enough, and we done it for each other deservedly. We equalized, we defended when we had to defend very deep, and we waited for our chances, and we got them. It was our game plan at the half of the time, at the half time, and unfortunately we conceded the third one.
Is this why you brought Javier Hernandez to the club? The goals he scored today, were they typical of the player?
Yeah, he's a goal scorer, but also if we are talking about him, we have to talk that the second half he had to play on a wing because we needed the legs. We had to have two banks of four, sometimes even six when they bomb up with the fullbacks. So he didn't only score goals, he showed a great enthusiasm and a great defensive work as well.
And before the game even kicked off, you lost Winston Reid. What's the latest on him?
You know, he felt a calf during the warming up, and it was like we were just talking when the players were doing the warm up. How on Monday we will have all the players back, and it's since a long, long time that we had them all, and then it is nothing serious, but it is serious enough to rule him out for this game.
And you've had two difficult away games. Is it important to remember the manner of this performance rather than the actual result?
Look, that's what I said. We are very disappointed. We lost a point, but we gained a lot, and there are a lot of positives that we can take from this game. A lot of them, yeah.
Thanks for talking.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
What do you think of that, then, John?
Well, he's obviously taking the positives out of that, isn't he? Which he has to draw on, doesn't he? I don't think he's panicking yet. It's a long way to go. But like you say, it does make this early on in the season, it does make that Newcastle game a big game.
Yeah, it does. It's a 6-point already, isn't it?
Save our season.
So just quickly, you know, I touched on it earlier, but you know, we're playing our first 4 games away from home. And that's because of the World Athletics Championships. Of course it is. Because we play in an athletics stadium. So, Sean and John, I think it's probably a topic that you will want to debate. Do you think...
Well, why do you want Nigel to debate it?
And Nigel. Well, I mean, you and Sean always just have it out of each other over the stadium. So I thought, you know, set you up and off you go.
It's only 2 games, actually.
Why don't you just let Nigel have a little go with Sean, and I'll sit out of this one. Because I agree pretty much where Nigel comes.
You had a 50-50 chance, right? Right. Let's not get too dramatic, right, about this. We had a 50-50 chance of our first away game being from home and our third away game being from home. So actually, the way it worked is, right, Southampton was away. You know, we have to play everybody, so it's going to swings and roundabouts. We agreed with Southampton play away from home, and unfortunately, we're playing Cheltenham away from home, and we're going to have to pay them some compensation by giving them the away, but that's going to be next to nothing. So financially, it doesn't cost us anything.
Well, that's what I mean.
It was a deal we understood when we signed the concession agreement for 99 years.
Stop saying we.
We,
the
we,
ball, the
Royal
club,
we,
not the
Karen
fans.
Brady and everybody else, we knew in 2017 that we would have to start with an away game. Now, the I've spoken to London Stadium 185, who are responsible for this with E20. They will have the stadium back on the 25th of August, back to stadium mode. They've done really good. It takes them about 9 days. But that's 2 days later and 2 days too late for the Cheltenham game. So what? One time in 99 years. Get a grip, guys. Come on. Is it a big deal?
You don't know it's one time in 99 years.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, no. It's the only one in the contract, Nigel.
So what you're saying, so if the World Athletic Championships want to come back to London, if another stadium that's bid to host it, you know, like Durban of doing with the Commonwealth Games, suddenly pull out and they're left scrambling around, hello, we've got an athletic stadium sitting there, are you telling me that it just will never happen? There is no more major athletics meetings to be held in the London Stadium for 99 years. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I'm saying that the agreement is that we agreed to one time that athletics would have the priority and no other time. Let me tell you, right, and I'll repeat this, there is still negotiation for athletics to relocate to Birmingham and not be in there. This stadium would make profit if it was not for athletics coming and doing this Diamond League every year in the anniversary games, and for a naming rights sponsor. If you do either of them, the problem goes away. So my understanding is they're trying to negotiate to move the anniversary games to Birmingham, maybe pay, they've got a 50-year...
What does Birmingham hold, fan-wise?
It doesn't matter because... agreed, the World Athletics Championship had 705,000, right? Brilliant. Fantastic. That was really good. Made about 26 million. Don't know where that money went, but I can guarantee you it didn't go to the stadium, right? But that's a 1 in 20, 30 year event. The athletics is waning each year and doesn't. So, yes, Birmingham only holds about 25,000. But really, there's not a lot to be done on that. There really isn't a lot. There isn't that demand. And I think, you know, the further we get away from 2012 and the London Olympics, brilliant that it was, the less demand there is going to be for a diamond championship, especially with, you know, Usain Bolt going, especially with Mo Farah going. These are the people that drew people, the crowds, but they're gone.
Yeah, but you can't predict the future. There won't be further superstars of athletics and they will want to have it in London. If they want athletics in London, they will go to the London Stadium.
They've already announced an extra competition in the London Stadium.
A 2-hour piddly competition between United States of America and England of doing some, I don't know, push-ups.
But does it really not make money because of the athletics? Is it solely because of the cost of realigning the seating?
Is it the seating cost?
Every time they change it from athletic mode to stadium mode, it costs them so much, it's detrimental to the...
It costs millions, John.
So they're spending millions of pounds for a 2-hour event, is that what we're saying?
Yeah. Well, not only that, but you've got the anniversary games. So the anniversary games, right, they get free of charge. They don't make any money. And the stadium doesn't make any money. It's a vanity project for Lord Coe. Lord Coe has got a lot of answering to do. It was a vanity project to him. There isn't the demand... And therefore, you know, they had a good run, right? Great. London Stadium's great athletics, and it showed it. But, all right, we could deal with a 1-in-20-year event when we look at athletics, the World Championships. But to have it every year, does that make sense? Not to me.
So what you're saying is they're going to scrap all athletics so that they have the concerts in the June and they have the athletics in the July, and you're saying there'll be no athletics in July. So they've built an athletics
stadium. In the next 5 years, I will guarantee it. I'll go a step further.
On crap seating.
Billions.
On a crap seating system so they can still have... So they can make it better for football. Remember, retractable seating was put in for football, not for athletics. It was already an athletic stadium.
Let's call it relocatable seating
Relocatable. All that was put in for the football fans. Now, they could also turn around the mayor of London or whatever and say, actually, we think you need to pay more. Now, contractually, we can go, we don't have to. But then again, UK Athletics has got a contract. They're the main tenants of that stadium, not us. We're the concessionaires.
Yep. Sure.
So you're painting a lovely picture on behalf of the board. The reality is not quite like that, though, is it?
Well, I think there's a long way to go, right? This is a government problem. All I'll say is, in the next 5 years, I think you'll see a change of ownership to the stadium. I see Newham owning it, and I see sometime in the future West Ham running it instead of London Stadium 185 as the operating committee. That's all I'm going to say.
But all that'll do nothing, actually, for the stadium, though, because you know they won't ever rip up the seating and put proper permanent seating in, because
hey, it can't never be say done. Never, Nigel. Oh. Never say never.
Well, I'll tell you what, they're going to rip up seating. And this is the thing that makes me laugh. You get people, oh, we can buy it, rip it up, hold up. They can get 60,000 or 66,000 fans. Who in their right mind is going to rip up the seating, spend another 150, 170 million to put seating in properly? So what? So they can have, what, 66,000 fans? Well, they can have that with the crap seating. The owners ain't bothered. They're still getting the same money. No one's going to pay the money to do that. It won't happen.
Yeah. All right. Look. Let's see in a year's time. I think lots of things are going to change, particularly after the mayor's report that's going to come out later this in September.
Okay, so moving on then, we have part two of the David Gold interview. Now, Sean, do you remember what is in part two that you want to give us?
Yeah, I think he talks about the, you know, in part two he talks about the ownership of West Ham and the succession plan, and particularly about these shareholder loans and the interest they charge on it and not taking money out. So here it is, part two of David Gold exclusive interview with more than just a podcast in association with Clarendon Hugh.
You just mentioned the academy, and I just want to talk about that. I know you support the academy. You were there last night at Dagenham to watch them. Do you think your social media comments about teenage players finding it tough to make it for the first team have been taken out of context? Because I know it's been written about in the media that, you know, that you're putting the academy and teenage players down.
Well, first of all, it's good to have an opportunity to discuss it. Just remember what I said. I simply said, and I put in brackets, teenagers. Teenagers breaking into the first team in the Premier League, the greatest league in the world, is difficult. I never said it was impossible. It's difficult. But it's not to say that when you get to 20 and 21, it starts to get a bit easier. And you have only got to look. If you were to, let's take the first 10 games of the season, those first 10 games in the Premier League. The first one was yesterday, Friday night. You look at that Friday night game and show me how many teenagers was playing in that game. I don't know, but I would put my, well, I was going to say I'd put my house on it, but maybe I shouldn't. I'm pretty confident that there were no teenagers playing in that game last night.
Yeah.
Were there 20-year-olds? Well, possible, but that's not a teenager. A teenager is 17, 18, 19. They're the kind of levels of teenagers breaking into the Premier. And I remember, the 1980 Cup Final, West Ham, Clive Allen, was it not Clive Allen? Paul Allen, wasn't it? Come on.
Yeah,
come on,
yeah,
Sean.
Yeah,
you're
yeah.
the expert. I think it was Paul Allen, 17 years of age, playing in a Cup Final against Arsenal. I think it was that game. That was unbelievable. Would you see that today, a 17-year-old? I mean, it happens once every decade. I think Rooney, you know, was
Michael Owen as well, I think.
Michael Owen was one. Yeah, but they are so rare, and they are the cream of the good. So the point that I'm making is it is difficult for teenagers. Now, is it difficult for teenagers to break into in a rhyme and leave? Yes. It's not too difficult to break into it in the Ryman League, because a young 17-year-old or an 18-year-old is not, the first team isn't full of internationals. It's full of part-time players. So he's got a better chance of getting into the first. But the Premier League is virtually impossible. That was the point that I was making. But that's not to say, I mean, we at the moment, I watched our players last night. We've got two young players that have gone to Bolton on loan. Great prospects. We've got a number that didn't play last night.
Well, I saw Decker and Rice and young Holland were missing. So
they weren't there.
I put two and two together and made five. And, of course, Declan Rice is only 18 as well. And I'm not asking you for the team, but I'll be very surprised if he's not sitting on the bench or playing, you know, travelling with the squad to Manchester tomorrow.
You're absolutely right. That is absolutely true. You know, that I think we've got one of the best group of young players for a long, long time, without me being specific. For a long time, we've got a good group of young players. Some of them have come through the academy. Some have been brought in. But we've got some very, very exciting young players. But are they going to get in the team when they're 17, 18, 19? I doubt it. But what they are is that they're being groomed to be to give them the opportunity to break into the Premier, into our team. In when they get into their 20s, 21, 22, and then you will see them blossom.
I think it's a quite exciting time. We've got access. Apparently, Hugh, we've been speaking to Terry Westley, and we're starting to do more promotion on the whole academy. And I think it's probably, again, one of the most exciting points in the academy, that we can get that glory back, that either people will be breaking through to the first team, or that they go on to further their career elsewhere and we make a handsome profit. And I think that's all you can ask for. The days of us being the only academy are long gone. You know, everybody's investing money in academies. But if you look at Chelsea, they've got wonderful facilities. But how many of their players break through to the first team? Hardly any. I can't think of one at all from Chelsea.
No. Well, last year they didn't play 1 minute of a teenager, not 1 minute. I think Everton was the biggest one with, I think, 1,000 minutes or something. But overall, it's a tiny, tiny percent of teenagers that are breaking into the Premier League. And just to complete that scenario, I was saying that last night there were, I'm fairly sure there wasn't a single teenager playing, and now we've got 9 more matches to go, because there's 10 matches, the first 10 matches of the season. I would be very surprised if there's more than 2 or 3 teenagers that will play any part in those games.
Yeah, I'm sure you're right.
We've got to face the facts of life. This isn't deriding the young players. It's just that there's a movement in the way it happened. In years gone by, it was easier for a teenager to break in to the first team. Now it's more difficult. That's not to say our teenagers, I want to tell you, are fitter, more equipped, more talented than they've ever been. But their competition to get into the first team is so considerable. These are a team full of internationals. You know, you imagine a young goalkeeper at 17. What chance has he got of breaking into our first team when you've got Hart, an England international, and Adrian, who is likely to be a Spanish international in the not too distant future?
Yeah.
What chance does an 18-year-old have?
Yeah.
Yes, he'll have a better chance when he's 19, and a better chance when he's 20, 21, 22. But at 17, he's got no chance.
Yeah,
but I think you've cleared it up.
Yeah. The problem is, you know, it's 140 characters on Twitter.
You can write
something, and it could be taken out of context and become, you know, back page news in the tabloids overnight, can't it?
Yeah, no, I get that.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sports ad free. That's amazon.com/sports ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Yeah. Can we move on to on West Ham? And I know you've covered this a few times, but I just wanted to get some clarity on it. Karen Brady on her own website values West Ham at £800 million at the moment, and I know that it's as much as someone will be prepared to pay for it. Is there any circumstances that you would sell some or all of your shares at all, or is it? I know you've repeatedly said you're handing your shares down to your daughters and you want them to carry on the legacy. But do you see any circumstances where you would sell? This repeatedly comes up. People say, yeah, it's all a smokescreen. Once the government sharing of 10 years happens of giving money back if you sell it with the London Stadium agreement, which I think is 2026, they'll be off and they'll be out and they'll be cashing in £1 billion.
I think David Sullivan's made it clear that, you know, he has no desire to sell his shares. I have made it clear time and time again that I have no desire to sell my shares. My love and passion in my life all revolves around West Ham. I've achieved many, many things in my life. And the most driving force in my life is my football club, our football club. And to that end, so I don't know many clubs in the Premier League where the values go backwards. So here's from a commercial point of view. Yep. The values of football clubs have gone up and up and up. You look at Arsenal, I can remember when it was valued at 300 million. It's probably now worth 3 billion. Clubs in the main, the values are going up. Of course, if a club gets relegated from the Premier League and then gets relegated into the fourth division, yes, then the values go down. But in the main, the stalwarts of the Premier League, the values go up and up as the years go by. So why would I sell? It's my life. If I sell, what do? Go fishing? I just love the involvement. As a young boy, a reporter once said to me, standing outside of Green Street, my 442 Green Street where I live, looking across at the stadium, said to me, when you were a 7-year-old boy, did you ever believe you would own West Ham United? And I said to him, when I was a 7-year-old boy, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, whatever it was, I used to dream of owning a bike. So I fulfilled my wildest dreams. And the point there really was to say I didn't even dream of being part of the ownership of West Ham United, my beloved club. And here I am now. A joint owner with my friend and colleague, why would I want to sell? The only time that you would sell is in the event that you believe that the buyer could do a better job than you. And at the moment, we are doing a decent job. We've never had an offer We've never had a situation where we've had to say, well, do you know what, for the best interest of the football club, we should sell. That's never occurred. So until that happens, we don't have an issue. And even then, I would want, and I'm sure David would want also to be part of a new regime, if ever there was such a thing. But right now, we're very, very happy. And we think we're doing okay. We're doing okay. You know, it's difficult. We've been through the most traumatic event in probably the history of our football club, in migrating to a new stadium. And we think we're doing okay.
You're always going to get the haters, David, and that's always the case, because, you know, there are always going to be the people, but not you. But I think most people have considered, you know, and considering the chairman have gone before at West Ham, that, you know, all owners make mistakes, but you've got the, you know, the heart of the club, and to, you know, financially in particular, you know, from the Armageddon we were to where we are, then there's been a big movement. I just wanted to go back to succession planning. Obviously, Jack Sullivan has done his work experience in different departments in West Ham. He's been made managing director of West Ham Ladies. Is there a possible addition with your daughters, Vanessa or Jacqueline, taking a seat at the board or taking some future involvement in the club?
Well, the situation would be that my daughters would inherit my shares, as indeed David Sullivan, young David Sullivan, and young Jack will. Mm. Jack is clearly being groomed, as you can see, and his passion for the football club is quite clear. My daughters are business women, and their contribution in the future would be very valuable, and I could see both the Sullivan boys and the Gold girls, so to speak, forming a board that would be well balanced with the passion of the football. Don't forget, my daughters are passionate fans. As well, they've got obviously responsibilities at this stage of running Ann Summers the business, but that wouldn't preclude them from being on the board of West Ham in some time in the future, as indeed the young Sullivans would also be part and parcel of it. So, you know, and this is how David Sullivan and I see the succession. You know that. But you never know. I mean, there's a long way to go. Hopefully, I'm going to live to 100.
I know it's good news.
And I'm doing everything to ensure that that happens. But yes, you know, this is a... you know, they talk about West Ham being a family. The board is also a family when you take the Sullivans and you take the Golds. It's a family thing. You know, what with the West Ham claiming that it's that we're more than a football club, that it's the, and I think you often hear Mark Noble talk about the family, the West Ham family. I think that that we are part and parcel of that.
Yeah, I want to ask one more probably contentious question before we move on your views of the season ahead, before we finish the interview, and that is a clarity on. I know you and David have said you'll never draw a salary, you never take expenses from West Ham, and to my knowledge, and I follow the finances, you never have. But the shareholder loans keep on going up, and people speculate. Obviously, my understanding is yourself and David loaned around £50 million to West Ham when they were relegated in the early days, the injection of capital when no banks would lend you money. The contention is, interest is charged between 6 and 7%, and that's been accruing, and that's due for repayment on the 1st January 2020 with a little bit paid back last year. There are some supporters who claim if you're passionate and you're fans, you shouldn't be charging interest. Can you clear up this dispute and what people...
Right. When we came into the club had some very caustic debts where they were paying interest at 10%. And not only were they paying a high rate of interest, but they were caustic in the sense that what could happen there is that if the club couldn't meet the repayments or the interest, they could foreclose and put the club into administration. That's what a caustic debt is.
Yeah.
If the debt is our debt, we're not going to foreclose. So we're a safer lender. We're a safer lender because we're only ever going to take our and don't forget, you're going back to the original. The original was that these debts, interest on these debts, were at a very high rate. The reason was that people didn't want to lend money to West Ham United Football Club 10 years ago. So the interest rates were very high. We replaced those high interest rates with a lower interest rate. So the minute we put the money in and paid off those debts, we reduced so that West Ham United Football Club, and I'm just rounding these figures up, we're paying 10%. Now West Ham United Football Club, our football club, is only paying interest at 6%.
Mm-hmm.
So that's good news, yes, Sean?
Oh, yeah, I don't disagree. From a business point of view, it is. I think that what some fans will say, if you love the club, are you a businessman or are you a fan? They claim you should charge no interest at all.
Okay.
I'm not in that camp because I understand business and financing.
Right.
But that's what the board, okay, well, anti-board people would say.
Yeah, well, let me answer that. To loan West Ham money, it wasn't money that was under the bed that we took out and gave to West Ham and now we're earning 6%. That's not true.
Yeah.
To be able to fund those loans, I had to remove investments that were returning me 10% plus.
Yeah.
So I cash in my investments that was showing me a 10% minimum return and I loan that money to West Ham at 6%. So I'm now 4% worse off. West Ham are 4% better off because they were borrowing money at 10% and now they're only borrowing it at 6%. So everybody, the football club is better off, it's more secure. The only losers are David Sullivan and myself because we're loaning money at a lower interest than we were.
Yes. I'm really glad you said that because I think people do think you had 50 million under the bed.
Yeah,
and
well,
you just
brought
some suitcases in and said, there you go, cash, there's the cash, you know.
Yeah, and you know, and they're if you like, these investments are basically the inheritance of my daughters, you know, and I have a responsibility to ensure that I'm doing sensible things, and I'm not doing what Mark Goldberg did. I'm not doing what Simon Jordan did, which was to take their wealth, pump it into the football club, and then wake up one morning and their £36 million that they sold their businesses for has disappeared.
Yeah.
Now what use is Mark Goldberg's Crystal Palace?
Yeah.
What use is Simon Jordan now to Crystal Palace? And I'm just naming two because I had involvements with them and I know them. Very nice, you know, genuine football fans, genuinely cared about their football club. And yet they went broke and so did their football club.
Yeah.
Now, what they probably did, and I'm only making this up and really just to make the point, they probably loaned the money to Crystal Palace for no interest. Or they gave it to Crystal Palace.
Yeah.
But the bottom line is Crystal Palace went into administration. Simon Jordan lost most of his money and Mark Goldberg lost all of his money. So what good is that if you've got businessmen running your business into the ground?
Yeah.
What you want is measured businessmen that recognise the dangers of not being prudent.
Yeah. Well, on that, and this is my last business type question before I ask you about your hopes for the season, and we finish, is the transfer business. Slaven Bilic said in his press conference yesterday, I don't know if you've heard it, that the net spend was around 10 million. I make it closer to 20 million, but there's some supporters say we should have spent 100 million this summer to compete with everyone. What is it? Do you set a particular transfer budget, but don't spend it if you have to? Because people believe you should spend everything in the transfer budget and that's it. And you always get that mentality from some supporters.
Yeah, well, of course. And when I was a supporter, you know, I can remember calling out to the chairman, I can't remember his name, whoever it was, you know, spend the money, bring in a centre forward, one that scores goals. But really what I was saying was gamble with your money, not with mine, by the way, gamble with your, come on, chairman, gamble. Yeah. That's what I was saying as a fan, because I wanted new players. I wanted to win. I wanted success. I didn't think of going bust. Never occurred to me. Just spend all your money, all the club's money and all your money in ensuring success of our football club. That's what we want. That's what drives us all. But the bottom line, and how often have you, you know, if you listen, read Twitter and you see fans saying, pay him what he wants.
Yeah, all the time.
Pay the club whatever they want, whatever it takes to get in so-and-so player. We want him. Pay them what they want. Well, you'd go bust. I mean, you imagine, you know, you're going to have some repairs on your house and the wife says to you, pay him what he wants. I mean, it's you know, in any other way of life, nobody would ever say, pay him what he wants. Oh, you're going to go out and buy a second-hand car today? Well, just pay him what he wants. No. But in football, that is where it all changes. And that's when people lose that. You know, they're so overwhelmed by their optimism and their excitement of the future. They want to win football matches. We all do. And to that end, they would say, pay him what he wants. And they're in. And I bet that happened to Simon Jordan and to Mark Goldberg, you know.
I mean, Slav's right. 10 million net spend sounds very good business from a business point of view. But I assume we've got more money. And I'm not going to push you about, you know, negotiations that are ongoing at the moment. I assume we've got more money if the right player that Slav wants comes along before the transfer window.
Well, we will find the money. I mean, either the company finds the money or that we will back it. I mean, all the debts in the company are all backed by David Sullivan and myself. We wouldn't be able to borrow money without the security that comes from David and myself.
Hmm.
So if we do go the extra mile, it's us that's supporting it. But not to the extent that we're going to endanger the football club.
Yeah. No, fair play. You've been very transparent and honest. I'm just
sorry,
going to ask
Sean,
you my final...
That.
I said thanks for that. You've been very transparent and honest in all of the answers to the, you know, some of the tricky questions I've asked you.
Mm.
The final question really is your hopes for this season. You know, we're playing Manchester United away at Old Trafford. I think we're 10-1 if you wanted to have a bet to win. What is your hopes for this season? What league position would you personally be happy with? And have you got a sort of cup run prediction as well for this season?
Yeah, I mean, this is not any pressure on anybody. This is a personal view of mine based on the business we've done. Of course, I don't have I can't see into the future. So the issue, we've all experienced it, it's injuries. Last year we had a poor transfer window, plus we had a unbelievable run of injuries. The last game against Burnley, we had 8 players injured, arguably they could have all got into the first 11 or at least on the bench. In other words, the 18 players that travelled, those eight players, I'm sure, would have been, seven out of those eight would have been in the on that coach. So there's no doubt that injuries did last year play a big part in the fact that we couldn't beat our previous league position, which is something that we're always looking to do, improve on last year. So to that end, it revolves around injuries, that we don't have those horrendous injuries that we had last season. We start off going to Manchester United with four injuries, but those four injuries are, you know, hopefully they're only 2-3 weeks away from being back in the first division, being in the first team. So, you know, I'm very optimistic. I think that Andy Carroll will play a part this year, a bigger part than he played last year. I think Sacco will play a bigger part this year than he played last year. So they're almost like new players. We've hardly mentioned Andy Carroll and Sacco, and yet two fantastic strikers. On their day, Andy Carroll is unplayable, and Sacco is a top-quality player. So, but nobody speaks about them. It's as if they've disappeared. Because of their injury record. But I am optimistic that both will play a substantial part in this coming season. To that end, and keeping my fingers crossed that the injuries are going to be considerably less than last season, I'd be disappointed if we don't do better than eighth. I'd be disappointed if we're below eighth place. I also would be disappointed if we don't have a decent run or even get to one of the finals of the two major cups. That's how optimistic I am. And it's not blind optimism. You know, I am a fan, and of course, as a fan, we do tend to be optimistic at the beginning. And then we're disappointed as the season progresses. But I think it's measured optimism. When you're able to fulfill your manager's requirements of players being brought in, all four of his first choices were met this season. That's you know, terrific. I also am optimistic that they are one or two young men coming through the ranks that I think will could emerge this season and be something special. But only time will tell.
Yeah, well, I think to Daily Mail, an article yesterday, two analysts said West Ham could be the dark horse. And Quarrels, the bookmaker, said they will take an absolute killing if West Ham Premier League, that a lot of West Ham, even more optimistic than you, if West Ham win the Premier League like Leicester did, they will have to pay out very large on optimistic West Ham fans who first to win the Premier League.
I have to say that to balance that what Leicester did happens once in 100 years.
Yeah.
But that's not to say it couldn't happen again, and that a team outside of the recognised top six, you know, doesn't break through and surprise everybody.
Excellent.
And I just feel it's time. You know, every club has its time. You know, West Ham surprisingly beat all the odds to win the FA Cup in 1980, and I was there.
Yeah.
And it was. You know, the odds were no different to the odds of going to Manchester United. I'm sure, if my memory serves me right, I think West Ham on the day to win the FA Cup in 1980 was 10-1.
We nearly did it in 2006 as well. So and the odds were against us then.
Even today, I will never, ever, I mean, every time I think of that game and see it on TV, how could we, you know, I'm trying to think of his name now.
The crossing didn't pass.
Who scored the goal? No, he scored the goal to equalise, you remember?
Lionel.
Gerrard.
Gerrard, yeah, the crossing injury time,
And even then, even when he struck the ball, I was quite confident that it would have been saved. It just was a freak, you know, just inside the post by an inch. Okay, I'm over it.
Yeah, me too. Anyway, thanks for being a guest on More Than Just a Podcast. Good luck for the rest of the season. Hope to speak to you maybe at the end of the season and see how we did.
Thank you, Sean. Enjoyed talking to you.
All right. Cheers, DG. Bye.
Cheers. Take care. Bye-bye.
Okay, then. That's David Gold's interview all done. John, what do you think of that?
Same as last week. I'll tell you when I've listened to it. Sean, do you have to leave now, do you?
I do, yeah. There's a little bit of holiday emergency at the moment. Did you do any Facebook or Twitter questions today, Georgie?
I did. I've got a few now.
Can I say my goodbyes now, early?
Okay, you say goodbye, Sean.
Thank you for joining me from Spain. I'm going to give my prediction early. I believe we're going to win 1-0 against Cheltenham, and we're going to win 1-0 against Newcastle. Come on, you Irons! And I'll be back next week. See ya.
Will you still be away next week?
I will still be away next week, but I hope to join after happy hour again. One last thing. I love you guys.
Yeah, missing you.
Yeah, miss you already.
Miss you already.
Missing you more.
It's time for this. It's Facebook Twitter question time. So I put on our Facebook group, facebook.com/morethanjustapodcast, and our Twitter @moreTGApodcast literally only 30 minutes ago, because I forgot. Hands up. We're about to record it in a second.
When Sean asked you blacked it.
Yeah. Got it, haven't I?
Yeah, well done.
Because no one else does anything for podcasts apart from Sean. I did say, any comments on the ref in Saturday's game? Send in any questions or comments now and we'll read them out. So we've got only a couple. Paul Sanders says, do you guys think that Carvalho will come despite the two defeats? To be honest, I don't think the two defeats are going to bother him. If he wants his move, he'll get his move. But, you know, it has gone a bit quiet, hasn't it?
Yeah, I don't know.
I think they're waiting. The way I see it is that there's a release clause. West Ham won't pay it. Lisbon then, therefore, under no pressure to sell the player until deadline day. If no one else has come in and done a deal, if they want to take our 30 million euros, pesos or whatever it is we've offered 30 million of, then I'd imagine the deal done. So it could be a don't go to bed DG tweet on deadline day for me.
We like those. Paul also says, do you agree that we've not had a stronger squad for ages and should finish 8th? Well, on paper, I guess, yeah, but it doesn't matter what happens on paper, does it?
I don't know. I mean, you see some of these, like the same font, look like a decent short-term replacement for Ogbonna being out when he signed, but he hasn't done it. IU looked like an upgrade on what we had, but he hasn't done it. Yeah, so, I don't know. I wouldn't say we're stronger than we've been, is it? Because that's a Piatt season, last season at Berlin, all that coming together, I think we were stronger then.
I can't see us finishing 8th.
I can't see us finishing 8th either. Lewis Aaron Trout says it should have been at least 3 red cards. So I'm guessing he's saying the Arnautovic one that happened, but then Noble and the elbow on Arnautovic.
That Tadic, wasn't it? There was that Tadic went through.
Oh, yeah. It could have been 4 then.
Chicharito, didn't he?
Well, I don't think that Arnautovic going down would have been red card. The bloke jumped with his arm in the air. That's what you're supposed to do if you're going to jump.
Yeah, but you saw Robson Kanu, he got sent off for a similar thing, didn't he?
Yeah, well, I thought Arnautovic made a bit of a meal with it myself.
Inconsistencies all round, yet again, from referees. Anyway, very harsh last-minute penalty, but that doesn't excuse the poor management again, so he's going for Bilic. Rice is a centre-back. Why pick Fonte ahead of Ogbonna? And why start with a not-match-fit Antonio? Because he is desperate. He has to go. Wow.
Oh, dear. There it is. I thought Antonio had done well, to be fair.
Yeah, so did I.
It was bright, and yeah.
And actually, we should mention Declan Rice. I thought he had a good game in centre mid.
Yeah.
Bad for his first Premier League start.
Yeah, I agree.
You could bring, hopefully, we'll get Chiarty back, and then that'll be a nice problem to have if Chiarty comes. Because Chiarty could go centre half easy and play Rice centre half.
Yeah, but I mean, Fonte's just not—he's not the answer, is he? So he's got to change it about.
No, I'm just checking Twitter. No.
What do we make of all this? In the last two or three days, they've publicly announced that Carroll—they'd be open to offers for Carroll, and they'd be open to offers for Snodgrass. It's unusual, isn't it, for clubs to put that out there like that?
Yeah, I mean, I'd like to personally try again with Andy Carroll, get him fit and play him with Hernandez, because I think those two on form could be very hard to deal with. But Snodgrass, I don't really mind if he goes tomorrow.
I don't mind if either of them go. Sacco's the one for me. If he's going to be playing and back, then cut your losses with Carroll. You keep one, let one go. If I was out of preference, I'd prefer Sacco over Carroll.
Yeah, I mean, Sacco's got a lot of promise, I do. He's just never, again, another one who's not delivered because he's been injured all the time. So hopefully they got to the bottom of that now.
Well, but it was also attitude problems for him, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think so. He doesn't ever smile, does he?
A lot of people seem to fall out with Bilic. That's a worry. Bilic seems to be having problems with a lot of players. There's a lot of players that have got attitude problems, and normally that's coming from the management. They've got a problem with the management. And I'm wondering whether that there's a discord behind the scenes that we've yet to hear about.
Ooh, conspiracy.
There you go.
That's it for Facebook to the question time. Only a couple because I forgot to do it. Anyway, predictions for this week. And weekend, please. Cheltenham away and Newcastle away. Nigel, you go first.
Without knowing
don't
the team,
don't want to put you on the spot or Cheltenham. Anything.
Yeah, I'll go for a win. But if we put the kids out, I'd be a little bit worried. Newcastle, I think we will win. I can see us getting a 1 or 2 nil up there. They're poor.
Yeah, they don't look great, do they? John?
I think we said last week, I think he should put out his strongest team he can put out just to try and get some cohesion back in the team. So I reckon we will win. I reckon we'll do them sort of 2-3 nil. Newcastle, I hope and I think and I want to win, and I think it'll just be tight and nervy because it's West Ham and it'll be 1-0.
Yeah, I agree with you on the team choice for Wednesday. I think it's important we get this group of players gelling, so I'm going to go for 1-0 win at Cheltenham and a 1-1 draw at Newcastle. I think they'll be up for it big time given their two sort of poor results. They're in desperate need of a win.
If he picks a decent team and people get injured, there'll be a lot of finger pointing.
Yeah, you're right. It's a risk. It's a risk for him, but you know that's why he gets paid the big bucks.
They've come out publicly and said they want to win a cup. This is a cup. We're not going to win anything else, are we? So he's got to put his best out for these cup games.
Well, that's it for Maundra's Podcast, episode 2 of season 7. We'll be back next week, will we? Yeah, we will.
We will.
Oh, I'm just thinking, there's an international break soon already, isn't there?
But Sean will still be in Spain, I think.
Yeah. Hooray.
So it's goodbye from me, George.
It's bye from me, John.
And it's goodbye from him, Nigel.
Bye.
Bye. Come on.
on your irons.
Bobby Moore, more than just a podcast. Bobby Moore, more than just a podcast.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.